Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly radio show. Moments away, Pam Pinnock will be with us, author about saving water in your garden. But first, a product that will make your plants smile. That is Simple Grow.
Are you worried about your plant growth? Provide your plants with what they need to grow to their potential. Simple Grow offers 100% organic worm castings at simplegrow.com. Unlike other worm casting products, when you order from Simple Grow, you are getting 100% worm castings, not filler plus castings. You can promote ideal soil structure and aeration with Simple Grow's all-natural, odor-free worm castings. There's only one ingredient, worm castings. No chemicals or additives will seep into their food, and it doesn't smell like other fertilizers. For indoor and outdoor use, you can order by the bag, bundle, ton, or truckload. Check out what Simple Grow has to offer with their 100% worm castings at simplegrow.com.
Well, Holly, let's go to the Proclamation Hotline, brought to you by Proclamation Goods, and bring in our guest for this week.
Pam Pinnock is an avid gardener, author of Lawn Gone and The Water Saving Gardening, roving photographer and former professional designer of many a water-wise garden in Austin, Texas. Welcome to the program, Pam.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, not only educating Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country. And we want to talk to you first about your book, Lawn Gone. What can you tell us that would make our listeners want to pick up a copy? What's unique about it? Maybe a bit of something that we would not normally have thought would be in that book.
Well, Lawn Gone is meant to do two things. It's first meant to inspire readers to think outside the lawn box and show what you can do with your yard instead of just carpeting the whole thing and turf grass and mowing every week. Second, it's providing practical information on actually how to get rid of your lawn and replace it with something else, which a lot of people just don't know where to begin. So that's one of the things that it's really trying to help people out with. And what you might replace it with could be like a mix of ground covers or no-mow grasses or spreading perennials, sedges, things like that. And also to get people thinking about people places that they can take up space with, like patios or play areas or contemplative spaces like a hammock zone or a fire pit seating area, stuff like that. The book also includes tips on dealing with lawn-loving HOAs, which a lot of people run into when they're thinking about taking out some lawn, and includes regional suggestions for ground-covering plants from different parts of the country.
Well, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, there are certain municipalities, metropolitan areas that actually give tax credits or pay homeowners to get rid of that grass and put something more natural in.
That's true. People should definitely look that up. I'm here in Austin, Texas, and Austin has definitely offered rebates for drought-tolerant plantings and that sort of thing. So everyone, before they start, should look into that and see if that's something their city offers.
And I know what a lot of people are going to think. Well, a lawn, you got to have a lawn. You got to have grass. You got to do all these things. Growing up on the farm, and I've talked about this on the program, if the grass didn't grow, that meant we didn't have to mow it. If we didn't have any manicured lawn, it was just another task in which we had to do, and as long as it got mowed, that was the end of the story.
Right, right. Just essentially, you're just mowing whatever is growing
there.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, a lot of people call that freedom lawns, you know, that when you just let a lawn get full of the weeds that some people work so hard to get rid of, like clover and that sort of thing.
We were
let
ahead,
it grow.
We were ahead of our time.
That's right. No need to set yourself up for a workload that you don't really want to do or enjoy, or, you know, especially when you can grow so many other great plants.
Right.
So you grow in Texas Zone 8B. What are some tips for gardeners in a similar climate as yours, especially when it feels too hot or impossible to grow anything?
Yeah, it can really feel that way in the summertime here, which especially this summer, it's been 100 degrees for weeks on end, no rain. So the first thing I tell people in climates like mine is don't plant in the summer. Like, don't fall prey to the idea that you got to use the summertime to start a new garden. It's the worst time. So I don't even like to plant here after April unless it's something like a supremely heat and dry loving plant like a yucca or an agave or something like that. But summer is a great time to plan a garden here. Maybe in your climate, it would be winter when people would plan a garden, but here summer can be a great time to do it. And in fact, you can even, like, I tell people, like, as you're looking out the window and watching your lawn shrivel up under the Death Star, it just, put that Death Star to work and use it to help you kill your lawn. You can use the sun to help you solarize your lawn and just let it cook all summer under some plastic, or the lasagna method where you pile up your cardboard and compost and mulch and let it just cook all summer long under there. And then come the fall in October, when we get cooler weather and hopefully some rain, you can then be ready to go with your new garden design. And that's a great time to plant. So that's what I tell people, especially if they're new to our area, is shift when you're thinking about your gardening seasons.
And for many of our listeners, we don't have the ability to grow almost year round. It's usually about a 2.5 season, 4 month deal. And you guys down in Texas, though you can't grow in the hot summer months, you guys have more growing season than many of us up in the north are available to have. But also, we don't have 4, 5, 6 weeks of triple digit heat. So I think that's a trade-off we're willing to have.
There's trade-offs everywhere, that's for sure. And yeah, even though we're not planting in the summer, of course, there are lots of plants that do thrive here and will look good all summer. So the key is just not to be putting your shovel in the ground at that time, unless it's something that's really kind of a desert sort of plant. And yeah, we can plant all winter long here, and I do. It's a great time to plant from October through late April, early May, but that all works really well.
Well, let's talk about your other book, Water Saving Garden. Could be a benefit to pretty much anybody in the country, regardless of Texas or to Maine to Oregon. What are some something unique in that book that would help us and would encourage our listeners to pick a copy up?
Sure. So it's a book for gardeners in any climate who want to be more water conscious. You know, dry climate readers will want to know ways of collecting and holding rainwater in their gardens and making their gardens more water efficient. But in wetter climates, readers can learn how to make rain gardens and design their gardens so that runoff doesn't overwhelm storm drains. I'd say the most unique section, the one that many readers have told me they really enjoyed, is part 4, which is really kind of a fun section. It's about creating the illusion of water in a garden. And it's really just full of creative ideas for evoking water through the use of stone or like glass pebbles, wavy grasses, cascading plants, mirrors, just different ways to create the look of water in a garden without using any. And so it's fun. I got pictures for that section from all over the country. Lots of people are playing with these ideas, whether they're consciously trying to save water or not. And it's just a fun way to think about it as an extra thing you can do.
And whether you believe in climate change or not, for whoever or wherever you are, water conservation is important no matter what mind thought process you have, because it's important to everything.
It is. I mean, it's our most precious resource. And when you think about pouring drinking water on your garden, your lawn, when you really think about what kind of resource that is, it can really seem crazy. I mean, especially in the drier climate. So it is. It's something that people all over the country are just trying to do a better job of, not wasting this resource where they can plant more appropriately for the kind of rainfall they get, and have fun while they're doing it. Because we're not talking about cactus here. We're talking about all kinds of gardens and appropriate gardens for where people live and the plants that want to grow there.
And there's people may not be aware of this. Again, in certain municipalities and townships, some places you cannot collect rainwater, or there are taxes on the rain that falls on your property. So that's a whole nother mess in itself. I'm not going to advise this, but my advice would be do it, and then if you get caught, deal with it then.
ask forgiveness,
yes,
instead of permission.
Because
yeah.
I think that is absolutely insane that, you can't collect water that's falling from the sky because it's in our town and we're going to tax it. That is backwards to me.
Well, and two, there are different ways of collecting rainwater.
Yes.
So it might be illegal in some places to have a rainwater cistern, but it would be perfectly legal and perfectly appropriate to grade your garden in such a way that the water goes into rain gardens, or that it funnels toward plants that need that extra bit of water. And that's a way you can passively collect that rainwater.
You're not collecting it. You're just directing it to the places
directing
on your
it.
Property that needs
yep.
it. Yeah,
exactly.
We are talking with Pam Pennick, an avid gardener and author. So you set up a bottle tree, which I think is a really neat thing. What is a bottle tree and what is its history?
Bottle trees are traditional in southern gardens, although I've seen them in gardens all over the country in my travels. But it's a kind of folk art. It's really just you're collecting bottles. Traditionally, they're blue bottles. My collection of blue bottles comes from sake bottles that somebody gave me, but I think some Chardonnays come in blue wine bottles. Any kind of blue bottle, traditionally, sometimes white bottles or clear bottles, and you just stick them on dead branches of a tree. Or maybe you make your own tree by putting a post in the ground and, you know, banging some nails into it and putting your bottles on that way. I've seen people do it any number of ways. It's a very creative kind of way to add a little color to your yard. And if you put your bottle tree where the light shines through it, you know, then you get this extra bit of color and flash in your garden. I've even seen somebody put one in a focal point spot in their yard, and then they put blue Christmas lights on it that were on a timer. So every night, you know, and during the day it would shine, and then at night it would light up with those blue lights, which was pretty cool. You can make it out of anything. But as far as the history of it, it's a cultural practice, people say, that came from Africa to the U.S. via the slave trade. And blue bottles were thought to capture evil spirits and prevent them from harming people. So people would hang blue bottles out on their trees, or sometimes from wires hanging from trees. I don't know if that history is correct or not, but for sure the bottle tree is very popular in the South and easy and fun to put into any gardens anywhere. I mean, I've seen them all the way up to Seattle and on the East Coast, so they've definitely migrated.
Now, you use stock tanks in your garden. How do you utilize them, and why, and what is, for those who are not familiar, what is a stock tank?
A stock tank is a galvanized metal container that's used for watering your cattle or your horses. So you see them more often in farm country or ranch country. We have ranch supply stores on the outskirts of Austin here where you can find them very readily. But I've seen them in various parts of the country. Again, it's really if you're on, you know, near some land where people would be keeping cows and that sort of thing. Sometimes they're called stock tanks, sometimes cattle troughs. But what they're just great because they're very portable. It's easy to pick one up, bring it home. They come in different sizes, like 3-foot diameter, maybe even 2-foot diameter, big 8-foot diameter stock tanks. And you can use them for container gardens. A lot of people use them for planting vegetables in, getting their vegetables up off the ground so it's easier to garden. I like to use them for containers for agaves, which I grow a lot of here in Austin. It gets them up off the ground, so it keeps their roots dry and keeps my dog from poking his eyes out on their leaves, which is a plus. Of course, if you use it for something like that, you do have to poke holes in the bottom of it. I usually just go around with a nail and a hammer and just bang some holes in the bottom, and then you leave the drainage cap unscrewed. It's meant to be a watering container, right, for cattle. So you have a drainage hole there. You just unplug that. But if you leave it plugged, they're also great for making container ponds out of. They're really easy. You just get a flat level space, put a little, you know, tamped paver base or gravel down, and then you can put your stock tank on top of that and fill it up with water and throw some water lilies in there. And in our climate, you don't have to winterize it or anything. You can just leave those up all winter. And it's easy, no digging, and you have yourself a little pond in the backyard.
Absolutely. Well, Pam, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered us and the education on many different levels here. How can people find out more about you and purchase your books?
I encourage listeners to visit my blog, which is called Digging at Pennick.net, or you could just Google Digging Blog to find me. I've been blogging there since 2008, mostly about Texas gardens and water-wise design and plants, but I also travel quite a bit, and I always visit gardens when I travel, and I'll share gardens from all over the country on my website. The books can be found anywhere books are sold, as they say. You can find them on Amazon. You can find them in bookstores that still carry gardening books, and I hope people will check them out.
Well, Pam, thank you very much for being with us today and sharing your knowledge with Holly and myself and all of our listeners.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.